with the other, and importantly, we don't talk enough about that. And across our industries, we generate there's about 800,000 plus jobs out there, and that's a lot of people in across the industries. And important economically for Australia, agri-foods and its constituencies deliver about 20% of Australia's export earnings. More importantly, between us and mining, as we heard at the recent ABARE conference, together generate about 57% of Australia's export earnings. So the regions are critically important to Australia, not because it's a buoyant industry out there we need to do better, but important in the economic well-being of the country, because your standard of living is pretty much generated by the amount of trade and income that you earn externally. So that's important. And as you'll hear today in some of the examples we're talking, particularly about some of the models we're doing in Narrabri, we work with all industries, cross-industry rows. And I think at the end of the day, a lot of this is about old-fashioned regional development. And you can talk about skills and workforce, and you can talk about decent jobs, and we will do that this morning. But at the end of the day, it's about governments getting interested in the regions. We give them an economic reason to do so, and importantly, driving change through that process. And of course, our role is to assist that as best we can. Today, in fact, later on, I'm going to launch our latest environmental scan, which is a very powerful document that's finally getting traction with government. It's now looked to by government to see what the latest trends are in agri-food, and I'll talk a bit more about that. But effectively, our mantra, if you like, or our mission is about sustaining economic growth of the agri-food industry through world-class capabilities. That's pretty much world-class capabilities at the enterprise level, but of course they're generated through individuals, through leaders, as we've heard a lot about today, and particularly through having good business skills, because you'll find that young people particularly, and others around that aren't young, like to work with an employer who knows what they're doing, who sets out a clear plan, knows what the business is about, and is prepared to share the learning within that business to them. So that's part of it. Those four industry, I guess, priorities for us, and that came out of the current scan, which you all have in your bag, I think, or you did have yesterday. I'm not sure what you do with your bags overnight, but importantly, it's about attraction and retention of workers, and it's about the adoption of high-level skills across the workforce. And one of the dilemmas Australia is facing right now is we've got about 1.2 million Australians either unemployed, underemployed, or not in the workforce. An enormous potential capacity, but importantly in our areas, we're now looking for higher level skills, because you're getting fewer people, but you want those to have the highest possible skills you can achieve within them, so that they can actually become a gatekeeper, a manager, and run the enterprises around that with the skills they have. So you've got that widening gap between those basically around the cities that are underemployed or unemployed and our demand for higher level skills. And certainly one of the ministers we talked to is Minister Mark Arbib, who's got a Western Sydney electorate with a 43% unemployment rate. Some of those people are on their third generation unemployment, so it's quite hard to move them. But there is a sort of a national issue about how you liberate those people through some process or other to try and address some of the, to get them into work and at least contribute. Adoption and diffusion of research, practice and technology. I spent a long time in a research organisation, and importantly research, as we were told fairly thoroughly by the Minister at the ABARE conference, research is only good when it's delivered. And Australia has always been good at doing research, not so good at the so-called execution, which we heard a bit about yesterday. So we're doing some work around that with one of the CRCs now, and a number of others are interested in it, to try and see how we can engage with them to enhance the adoption and extension, but importantly to give people the power of professional skills to do that. And this year we separated attraction and retention, attraction of workers and workforce retention, because it's often seems to be easy to attract people but quite difficult to retain them. So we've separated that out, and we'll talk a bit more about that. Oh, sorry. So there are four things that have come out in our environmental scan, and those are the ones that I just mentioned, and particularly that'll be the focus of this year. So things we do relate to that, and our strategies are driven by that, and importantly, that's where we invest. We launched our environmental scan at the National Press Club in Canberra about this time last year, and at that stage we were apparently on the brink of a recession, and the government was saying you need to start thinking about finding jobs for displaced workers, particularly those in some of the industries that weren't doing well, like manufacturing. And we went into that on the basis that in fact, our last year environmental scan had Assuming the Mantle as a subtitle. So agri-food and agriculture and prime industry are doing extremely well, as was mining potentially. And importantly, that was the way we went through. So we announced at that launch that we were going to have a jobs summit, but it was based at that time on finding jobs for displaced workers, potentially. That didn't eventuate, but certainly we've stayed with Narrabri, and they were interested. We came here because there'd been some work done here with the cotton industry previously, and there was great support here from the council through Robin Favour and the Chamber, and importantly through the development group that was here at that stage. This is about community, and it's about employers working together, and we've heard a lot about that in the last day. And importantly, it's about that interaction and that sharing and that trust and that leadership. And I think it's the sort of leadership that you heard Peter Shergold talk yesterday. It's about empathy, understanding how you network with diverse groups, and importantly, how you engage them to stay involved. And that's been an excellent group. We actually had the summit, set up the workshop at the summit, and we offered funding to go with it, and that was matched by New South Wales Government and the Department of Industry and Investment. So with that, we managed to put someone on site here, which has been, I think, a key to it. That's Russell Stewart, who most of you will know, and he's around. But so those things, I suppose the other element of this was it was about cross-industry. So we've got retail, we've got engineers, we've got mining, we've got people that run businesses in town, because the view is that when you come in like that, you run how the community runs. You don't come in and try and create something new. So agri-food comes in, typically uses existing networks, and at this stage opened up a new one, but importantly we ran it their way, which was to operate as a community, as a set of employers. And the so-called Northwest Advisory Group comprises largely employers, but local government and I think the community leaders, which is really important to it. We call it Make It Work. And the overall objective is to develop new and sustainable approaches to securing, developing and retaining the workforce now and into the future. And of course there's a fair diversity of workforce across this region, and it's a great pleasure to work here because they're all interested in trying to resolve it. It's about cross-industry, as we mentioned. We were looking at their skill needs, their improved skills utilisation, and this issue is there's not much point in having a whole bunch of skills unless you have the job and the opportunity to use them. And certainly that's one of the impediments we have in some of our industry employers, that they tend to try and isolate employees to the bits of the enterprise they want to use them. But often that breeds enormous frustration, so you need to make sure you optimise what they've got to add and let them get close to the business, so not only can they learn, but importantly they can grow through education and learning. And look for career opportunities for young people, especially school leavers. And I think the anecdote we had at our job summit in last July was someone said that Narrabri loses its best young people every year when two busloads of young people go out having completed their high school certificate. And probably we don't know the reason for that, but it's probably because we didn't take any trouble to identify things for them to do, jobs for them to do, advise them there's actually careers out here, if only we thought about how to do that. And there's some of the issues you need to think about. And of course, retention of existing workers is always important. And as we mentioned, I think we've got a bigger emphasis in our consultations about the industry's future this year, about holding on to those you've got because they're probably the best value you're going to get. Seasonal workforce demand calendar, which John Buchanan mentioned, which Russell's been putting together. This comes back to the employer of choice, and we managed to convince John Buchanan to come up and run a workshop of about 70 or 80 largely employers and some other, you know, some industry leaders and also some community people. And there was a lot of twitching and turning when John started to lay it on about what you needed to do to be an employer of choice. Having said that, when they thought about the options and looked at it, wasn't really that hard. Obviously we can't often offer the money in agricultural prime industries that miners offer in terms of cash terms, but you can offer a better job. It's a more interesting job, it's a sustainable job, it goes on longer, and importantly it can really, you're into innovation and some of the things that a lot of young people are really interested in. And so John went through that, and we've since run workshops here which have been really successful, and people are thinking about it. How do you create a decent job that someone else would want? How do you redescribe the traditional titles we use, like farmhand, which has been around since 1900 or something? And think about what you've got to do to entice people. Think about their motivation as well as yours, and obviously hopefully they'll coincide, because the better person to get to match that job requirement, the better you'll do, and importantly they'll stay and you invest. And of course we heard this morning about return on investment, and some work that was done in New Zealand a couple of years ago, which we talk about, and we'd like to do it here, except it's slightly harder. But in the beef production and dairy production area, where, because New Zealand's quite tightly bound, it's quite, you can actually measure the impact of training. And I think the qualitative number there, there was a return on investment of about 3.9 to 1. So for every dollar you spent, you got 3.9 back through either better nutrition to cattle or the right mix of food rather than wasting it. But importantly, the qualitative aspects were more important. That is, a lot of those people that were doing well in those jobs actually told their mates who came and saw, it's great working down here. We're into processing, we're into dairy, we're into beef production, and we've got space. So the other qualitative thing, it actually brought in best practice. Those young, potentially young people and some existing workers actually learnt about best practice and international milestone. And to one stage there, in fact, they had to actually introduce some training for the owners and managers who got behind and were quite intimidated by the fact that their employees were doing so well. So there's some of the qualitative things, and I think they're probably more important. So it's about meaningful jobs, decent jobs, as John Buchanan will say, and think about what you're creating and why you're doing it. I mean, it's all very well for you to say you need a farmhand, but unless you think about what that means in the real job and how you can entice people to actually do it for more than 3 days, they're the things you need to think about. The end of that is about productivity, and we're in there as the government's in there, and it is to actually enhance productivity. In the mid-80s, Australian agriculture was aggregating productivity annually by about 3.8%, and now it's 0.06%, and which was advised to us at ABARE conference. That's low. There's a whole lot of reasons for that. One that they thought was about the drop-off in R&D since about the mid-80s, decline in R&D. Secondly, the usual adversities of drought and stuff that goes on. But importantly, we have to do more to produce more. The opportunity is extraordinary. If you look at the next 30 years for food production, fibre production, minerals production, the reasons are going to do it. We need to make sure we do better. Just quickly, we're looking for some ways now we're trying to get significant audiences with government, and we're working closely with the Department of Agriculture, Fisheries and Forestry, and with their sort of portfolio through the states and the federal group and their ministers, to try and see how we can get some attention onto the issues that are facing the regions. And we need to do something quite explicitly different than the traditional sort of training model that comes. We're also looking we've got to actually promote what's going on out here. And I was at the Sydney show the other day for a function that we're at, and they did a survey of what they knew about farms and farmers. And I said, I think the survey said they're wonderful people, they're noble people, they're doing a great job. What do you understand between what they do and what you eat? 92% had a very poor understanding. You know, they knew there was something out there that you grew and you ended up with on your plate, but importantly, they didn't know the difficulty of growing that, the complexity of it, the amount of energy and investment that went into it, and importantly, how it got to your plate. So, and someone said yesterday, we're the world's best kept secret. I mean, we don't tell people what we do. We don't... And as one minister said to us in Brisbane recently, talk it up. Don't talk it down. Talk it up. There's a great image out there, a great industry. People like what you do, and it's a great product. But for God's sake, talk it up. We're also looking for some cadetships for years 9 and 10 to get. We've been told we don't find, but the general advice is that that's when people start making their decisions. If you leave until year 12, they're pretty much decided or have moved on. And we need to try and get people exposed earlier to our industries and what they do. And linked to school through vocational training in schools and education and moving to higher education. I don't tend to just talk about vocational training anymore, because our industries want to talk about the continuum of the workforce. So they'll be talking to us about, you know, processes and food technologists and agricultural graduates. So we look at, when we're doing an analysis now, as we do with training needs through enterprises, we look at the entire workforce and we look for ways to articulate from one set to another. So we're looking for a seamless educational continuum, if you like, that people can go through it, whether you're a cleaner or a PhD, whatever you need in that enterprise, we should be able to help facilitate that. And the education system and the funding model needs to enable that as well. Just a couple of other things out there. The skills and labour are inextricably linked in the regions. I mean, you just can't get away from that, and we think it's probably the biggest impediment out there. The difficulty right now is it doesn't suit our industries. I mean, the traditional trades model, and I'm not knocking that, highly valuable, but it doesn't suit the flexibility and technical and scientific skills we need to get involved in. And importantly, nor does the funding model that goes with that. So we're seeking a new funding model for this region, particularly to drive that, to show the flexibility to do that, and also to deliver the training in a way that assists our industries, which might be at the enterprise level, might be by short, what we call building block approaches, and importantly, might be funded by the government more compatibly than you do now, whereas you need to do a full qualification before you get any public support for it. So we're driving that hard, and we're certainly getting a little attention, but we need your help to do that. I think the thing that's come out of Narrabri is quite, the model here is quite terrific. I mean, in terms of one is that you've got communities working together from across all industries. You've got looking at the establishment of labour pools along the place and looking at, if you like, an ecosystem approach to jobs that people might do two or three jobs in a year for two or three industries, but as long as you can keep them and their families and their kids out there, that's the way to solve it. And importantly, look at rapid diffusion of new knowledge into the industry, which we're thriving on. So there's some of the issues we're driving, and we'd like to support, and I'm happy to discuss it with you, but I think the sort of model we're doing here, the Make It Work model, we're very pleased about it. We're embarking on a similar one in Emerald in Central Highlands of Queensland, but importantly, this is going to be used as a model that potentially we could extrapolate across Australia, because I think it's driven locally, owned locally. It's a national solution, but it's owned and driven locally, and I don't see any other way, and our experience tells us there's no other way you can get a better result. Just finally, Robin, if I wouldn't mind just today launching this on behalf of the board, and I'm glad that Leith Bully is here with us, the environmental scan for 2010, which was published this week. Have a read. You only have to read the first three or four pages and you'll get the gist of what we're on about. But importantly, it's a powerful document, and we want to improve it. Importantly, we need your help in advocating what's in there, and through your industry groups and your leaders, and we look forward to continuing to work with you. Thanks.
Arthur's quite happy to take a couple of questions, so we have time for two. Does anyone like to have a question? They're stunned. I think they've taken it all in. Oh no, we've got one down here. Okay.
Arthur, I guess one of the things I've noticed in your environment there is about skills utilisation. That's something that's been talked about in the past. Do you want to just elaborate on?
I was just thinking about skills utilisation. I've noticed we've looked at that in the past, but in this year, the environment scan actually put it in quite explicitly that it's about how the skills utilised. Do you want to make a comment about why you pay for that grant?
Simply, I think there's a lot of evidence around now that we're not doing that, not just now, but elsewhere. And the view around is if you've got a lot of talent, capability and qualifications potentially, but you don't allow those to be exploited in the workplace, then you've wasted an enormous resource. Secondly, if you do that, and I think the New Zealand ROI established this, if you do that, people will stay and then embrace a broader range of activities. So they'll be pushing you to extend the job. We've just got to get the psyche, I suppose, in our traditional industries to make sure they can cope with that and design jobs that allow that development, because through that education you'll grow better people and I think also more capable people who will deliver better productivity.
Is there a second question? If not, then I'll ask you to join me in thanking Arthur. Oh no, we've got one more down here. Thank you.
Well, firstly, we've got to establish the case to get it, and I think that's clearly I was going to say a no-brainer, but it's not quite that clearly in terms of economics and the future and Australia's wealth. If you look at the next 30 years, where is it going to come from? It's going to come from the regions through food and fibre, and also through resources. I think we're looking now for a fundamental shift in the way government actually distributes money to the regions. They're distinctive, they're different, and they're not going to go places and let you do it. And I spoke to a group of young farmers in Gundawindi some time ago, and they show hands of which of you used the national system to train yourselves or your employees, and I think there was one hand up out of about 90 people. So they've moved away from the national system because it doesn't suit them. It doesn't meet their potential innovative and other needs, and secondly, they've got to go to classrooms and other things it doesn't meet. So we're seeking a model that funds what we call a building block approach, which is an incremental approach to getting trained. You do the bit that you need rather than the entire qualification. funding some courses, and secondly looking at like funding recognition of prior learning more broadly throughout the industry, looking at the establishment of some cadetships, and looking to replicate models like Narrabri around the country. So that's the sort of remit, but the important thing, if you get the funding model right, I think it will change the entire philosophy of how you do things in the region. It will give you the capacity to get training for what you want. And if you look at those young farmers, quite interesting is they all want to do better than Dad did or Mum did. So they're moving in and out of businesses. And sometimes I say to enterprise when I get the courage is you've got to be profitable to be in industry or in business. And those guys want to be in. So they were changing businesses every couple of years. Turned out it wasn't profitable, they'd move on. And I think that's the sort of thing that we need to do and be able to actually then satisfy their training needs to cope with their new activities.
Thank you, Arthur. Would you all join with me in thanking Arthur for his presentation?